thank you, Jude. You have to run, correct?
I do.
You're going to...
I've got important news to do.
Come back tomorrow.
Alrighty, I will.
And Judy's filling in for you, Wendy, on Friday. We're all looking forward to that.
Oh, don't be too good.
Nobody more than me.
All
right.
It's going to be fun.
Wendy, I can only do what I can do, which is be good.
Yep. Be great. All right. Thanks, Judy.
Thanks, we appreciate that.
Wendy, look who's here. It's our legal counsel, Rich Lenkoff.
Thank God. Someday I'm going to need you.
Yes.
I'm ready at your disposal. I'm here for you.
I follow the rules pretty much, but someday.
One day, Rich, you will get a call in the middle of the night.
Rich!
Asking for friendship.
Remember me?
Yes.
Right?
Above and beyond all else, friendship. Yes.
That day may never come, but.
And legal authorities.
Yes, I'll remember this day.
Yes.
All right. There's a groundbreaking case that's happening. Go ahead, Bill. I didn't want to step on your toes.
Let's start out with this. Where do you want to start?
Well, the two cases that are really interesting that we covered yesterday on our show, Legal Face-Off, among many things we covered, are the Trump being sued by CNN and Jim Acosta.
Yeah.
And then the NHL concussion lawsuit that just settled this week. Really interesting. And there's a Blackhawks angle to that, too. So whichever one
Can we start out with the Jim Acosta
story? Yeah.
All right. So we all saw what happened, a press conference last week.
He's a feisty little dude.
Jim Acosta
Or did you see what happened? Did you see the video or did you see the actual?
I saw the
doctored
actual
video. Or?
I saw them side by side to show that there was a difference. But still, Sarah Sanders Huckabee and the White House is claiming there was no, I think Trump actually said there was no doctoring of
but
that.
But they left out the words, excuse me, ma'am, right? Which
that's what they edited out.
Which was what Acosta said to the intern, which I think is relevant, and they sped it up. I mean, Kellyanne Conway was on the Sunday shows admitting that they sped it up, and she likened it to, you know, speeding it up during a sports replay, which I think is a bit of a stretch. But in any case, the lawsuit involves yesterday the White House was sued. Trump and Sarah Sanders and the chief of staff were all sued by CNN and Jim Acosta individually, claiming that because they removed his pass, they have infringed on his constitutional rights, his First Amendment right of the free press and his Fifth Amendment right of due process. Pretty
your thoughts on that, because I don't know where to stand.
Well, so a couple things. I mean, I think that it's a good lawsuit, in my opinion. I think that there is some basis to it. There's a prior case that basically says that in order to remove press credentials, you have to really narrowly look at it. And the standard, according to this case and some federal regulations, is that the reporter has to be a threat to the president. You know, clearly it's a stretch to say that even Acosta physically assaulted this woman. I know that's what the White House is saying.
He did not.
But as a threat to the president, come on, that's nonsense.
He's a threat to the president's credibility,
sure,
but he's not a physical threat
to
the president.
I mean, listen, we all know. Trump came out and said to Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes a few weeks ago, I go after the press so that people don't believe the bad things you say about me. I mean, it's not a stretch to know that Trump did this because Acosta's an enemy of him and a critic of him. Now, you might look at Acosta, as many do, and say he's grandstanding and maybe he goes too far. Okay. But I think there is a good basis for this lawsuit. And I think, and I read the complaint, it's pretty well written. The argument.
Who do you think would win? And will it be probably settled out of court?
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to go, you know, very far. I think they'll probably resolve it. I think they'll probably return his pass to him. But listen, we know Trump. We know Trump loves litigation. We know he loves to make a stand. And I don't see him caving too quickly. You know, can they resolve it some other way? Sure, that would be most expeditious. But I don't know if they will.
But Trump is a bad chess player because he's always looking at things one step at a time, never a step or two ahead. What he could do if he wanted to and play it smart was don't take away his press credentials. Just never call on him.
Right.
It's so simple.
That would have been more torturous or torturesome to Jim Acosta. Yeah,
but he can't. He's essentially doing the same thing, but without breaking any rules.
No question. I mean, I think you know the way he's done it is so overt and it's so childish, but it's so Trump. I mean, that's what he does. So you know what, trying to apply other standards to Trump is maddening. I think if I was him, obviously, you know, the way to confront it is, you know, as president, you want to take on your harshest critics. That's what presidents do. You should be mature enough to take on even the harshest critics. Now, if he did do something inappropriate, and, you know, of course, you know, that's beyond the regulations. But to simply pull the credentials because you're upset, I think it's nuts. And I think the lawsuit is well-founded. I think it's got some legs, and I think we'll see some other outlets doing the same thing.
To your knowledge, has this happened before where other people have had their press credentials pulled by the White House?
There was one case from 1967 where the Supreme Court, again, ruled that in order to do so, you have to really narrowly tailor it. And again, the standard, and according to the federal regulations on points as well, the standard is that you have to be a threat to the president. And, you know, this doesn't qualify at all.
Is the part where he may or may not be considered a threat because there was some physical altercation? The woman who, I believe she was an intern, right?
Yes.
Okay. So she's reaching for the microphone. He didn't expect that. He's been a reporter for a long time. He's never had anybody try to pull a microphone. So he's kind of defending the microphone. He's pulling it away from her. Is that the moment by which they would deem him to be a threat?
That's Trump's argument, right? He said that he was, you know, physically abusive or whatever the words he used.
He was not.
He wasn't. I mean, any objective look. And listen, ultimately, you would ask 12 people to look at it and determine whether that video represents a harm to the intern or a harm to the president. Come on. We all know what happened. I mean, right. We all saw the video. The video doesn't lie. Even if you speed it up, it doesn't lie. I mean, he didn't touch her. At best, he, you know, his hand happened to touch hers
right
when he was trying to hold the mic, as you said. So, yeah, I don't think by any stretch would that qualify.
I was bugged when he did turn, and Steve Bertrand is a journalist and kind of said he might have done the same thing, where if he was asking a question, he gets a second question, he wouldn't forfeit the microphone right away. I, on the other hand, this was this poor intern's job to get the mic, move it from person to person, and if I was another journalist, I would have been mad at Acosta, like, come on, enough already, we all want to turn here.
Sure. And that's, you know, listen, that's a valid criticism, I think, of Acosta. And many people have accused him, like I said, of grandstanding and asking too many questions. Okay. Does that rise to the level of, you know, taking away his press pass and arguably violating his constitutional rights? On the other hand, does the Constitution say that you have a right to enter the White House to do your job? Of course not. And that's a bit of a stretch to say that you have a constitutional right to get into the White House. He could stand out on the corner and talk all he wants.
Yeah.
That is within his rights. Does he have a right to enter the White House to do that? Who knows? That's never been tested.
It's just a bully move. Just because someone is putting your feet to the fire and questioning you and maybe not seeing things eye to eye, well, I'll show you. I'll just pull your press pass. It doesn't seem right to me.
It's a bullying tactic. And, you know, the Fifth Amendment violation alleged in the complaint, I think, has even, you know, a little more strong argument, because in order to do something like this to the press, who is, you know, a pillar of our democracy, right? Everyone agrees on that. You have to show some strong circumstance. And at least in my opinion, and most constitutional lawyers, I think, would say the same thing, give that person a chance to explain themselves in some kind of process rather than just withdrawing their right to cover the White House. So I think the Fifth Amendment due process violation argument is fairly strong.
As aggressive as he can be, Jim Acosta, look at all of the other press members, competitors of his, who came to his defense, including the very next guy at that press conference who defended him. That says a lot.
Correct. I mean, I watched every Sarah Sanders press briefing, you know, since the administration started. It's a competitive room. They're all jockeying. It's better than any TV show you can watch.
I bet.
They're all competitive. There's a finite amount of time. She's typically out there for 20 minutes or less. So, of course, to your point, they're all competitive. But the fact that they have all unanimously almost come out in support of Acosta. Listen, he has his critics. There are many who think that he's too much. But, of course, all the press supports the idea that let us ask our questions. That's the way it's been done in every administration. In fact, I read that Sam Donaldson is coming out in support of Acosta and writing an amicus brief in support of him.
Oh, so. Wow. Is Helen Thomas still alive?
She is not, but she had her fights with Reagan all the time.
He never
pulled her press pass.
You can't do that. I'm sorry.
I agree.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the hockey story and concussions. What can you tell us?
So this week, the NHL settled the lawsuit brought by 146 former players against the NHL for injuries resulting from concussions and other physical injuries. They settled for $19 million, which might sound like a lot of money, but in the reality of professional sports and how much the NHL makes, and they're making a record amount of money with the TV deals and new franchises like in Vegas. It's a joke. I mean, in my opinion, it's a ridiculous sum of money. Dan Carcillo, who's a former Blackhawk, two-time Stanley Cup winner, has come out on Twitter very strongly against it. He has called on Wayne Gretzky to, you know, be supportive of the players. The reason it's a joke is because it's such a small amount of money. It comes out to, of the 146 plaintiffs, they each get $22,000 plus $75,000 towards medical treatment.
That's nothing.
If they meet the standard, if a doctor, by the way, the NHL doctors, the same ones who have denied, you know, concussion causation for years, if those doctors approve them. So, you know, we've seen all the horror stories, especially in the NHL, for, you know, players who have committed suicide. Former Blackhawk Steve Montador is among the plaintiffs. He died in 2015 from CTE. So your family is going to get $22,000, really, which is a tiny percentage of the average salary. Compared to the NFL, which famously settled their case a few years ago, there was 20,000 plaintiffs in that case. Each of those players, not $22,000, they can make up to $5 million. Mm-hmm. That settlement was over $1 billion. So, you know, for a similar injury, and you could argue that hockey is even more violent, especially given, you know, people literally punching each other in the face
right.
as part of the sport, I think the players got a terrible deal.
Why did they agree to a sum that low? I'm curious.
Well, it's a good question. So, a few reasons. There was only 146 of them versus 20,000 in the NFL, so they obviously had less strength. There were less high-profile members of this group than in the NFL. The NFL, there was a lot of big names involved that obviously led to more recognition, that led to the union having more leverage. The biggest reason, however, is recently the a federal court in Minnesota denied the plaintiffs in the NHL case class action status. That means that they could have grouped together. They would have had a lot more power. Once that happened, once the judge denied class action status, that rendered the plaintiffs much weaker, and that gave the NHL a lot of leverage, and the NHL took advantage of that and came up with this, you know, really low settlement. So I think it's a shame. I think the NHL didn't do well for themselves. The reason, though, why the NHL won this settlement is a couple of things, and it's the same as in the NFL. Remember, by the time these plaintiffs get to the NHL, they've been playing hockey for 15 years, right?
Yeah.
How can you say, and the answer is no doctor has ever definitively said that the 3, 5, 7 years you're playing in the NHL or the NFL caused your CTE versus the years you played minor league hockey.
Right.
It's impossible to say that, and causation is a key element to the cause of action. The other thing is, do you not know that playing hockey is violent?
Yeah.
Do you not know that playing football is violent?
Yeah.
There's a concept in the law called assumption of risk. Just like when you go on a roller coaster, right, you sign a, inherently the back of the ticket says you're assuming liability. When you sign up to play hockey as a 5-year-old and through your career, you're assuming that there's a risk of head trauma. That's the argument against
it. I don't think you are when you're 5 years old, and I think your parents...
Well, someone is on your behalf, right?
Maybe now, but years ago, I don't think people thought of that.
Well...
Even parents... Yeah. I really don't.
Maybe parents didn't, but, you know, especially nowadays when the risks are so overt and everyone knows this
now
already.
Now we're aware of it.
It's hard to argue that you had no idea. Like the old cigarette smoking, right? I mean, it's hard to now argue that you're not aware that cigarettes are dangerous. I think it'd be hard to convince a jury that you playing hockey your entire life, you weren't aware and assumed some of the risks of, you know, these conditions.
So in this particular instance, there was 146 players. Okay, this is a class action suit.
Well, it's actually not. It didn't get qualified.
It's not qualified.
It's a group of plaintiffs.
It's a group.
Yes.
Yeah, they call it something different,
yes.
But essentially it's almost the same, right? All right. So starting with that case now being over, what will happen with other groups of players who go, wow, I played hockey. I'm experiencing difficulties. I want in on this.
So this is for existing plaintiffs. You know, future plaintiffs could still sue. The other thing is if a majority of plaintiffs in this case opt out, then the NHL reserve the right to call the whole deal off. So future players can bring a new lawsuit. This only involves this group of players.
Yeah. wouldn't you be better served if you are a player, a hockey player, and you see how this just played out with such a low, you go, oh, I got to do this on my own. I have to make this personal. Wouldn't that
on
make
the one
sense?
Hand, you could look at it as, you know, I might do better on my own than $22,000. On the other hand, what I said is the reality of the legal burden you have. As a plaintiff, in any case, if you sue someone for bumping into you, you have the burden of proving your case, right? So as a plaintiff, as a future hockey plaintiff, let's say, you have the burden of overcoming those two things that I said, the causation standard and the assumption of risk. I think future juries would not, you know, they would find it hard for a plaintiff to prove causation. If you can't prove causation, you get nothing.
Yeah.
So if you can't have a doctor, because it's hard to do it without an expert, credibly testify before a jury that it was hockey. It was the 2 years or 3 years. What's the average lifespan of a player? A couple years, right?
Yeah, right.
So the 2 or 3 years you played in the NHL, that's what caused your current condition versus the 15 years before.
Yeah.
That's a really hard standard to meet. So, you know, 22,000 versus zero is a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
But if I was a player, I would probably take my chances with a jury.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's Wayne Gretzky doing now? Is he coaching anywhere or anything?
And
I guess what I'm asking is, why didn't he get involved?
That's a great question. You know, a lot of the reason that big players didn't get involved is because hockey's a little different. You know, I'm Canadian, so I grew up with hockey. Hockey players really want to maintain roots with the league. A lot of them are former coaches. They're in front offices. Not to say the NFL is not like that, but it's closer in hockey. Frankly, a lot of them didn't want to, you know, cut their ties with the NHL and sue the NHL when it's, you know, a primary source of a lot of their revenue. Wayne Gretzky didn't come out because he's in business with the NHL. Didn't want to ruffle any feathers, I think.
No. When the NFL went through this and they had a lawsuit, they tweaked some of the rules to try to make the game a little safer and, I'm not going to say injury-free, but a little harder to get yourself hurt. Is the NHL doing anything similar?
You know, they made some rule changes, but listen, as of last night, I was watching highlights and, you know, there was two guys pounding each other sure. in the face for about 90 seconds. I mean,
yeah,
imagine...
Why don't they stop it anymore?
Yeah, imagine if, you know, there's a link, an unequivocal link between playing football and CTE. Imagine the link between punching someone in the face over and over again and right. developing brain trauma. I think it's clear. So, to answer your question, they've made some rule changes. You know, most notably in terms of just last night, there was a player who was driven into the net, and they called that a penalty when in the old days it wouldn't have been.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is you still have guys punching each other in the face as part of a major sport in this country, which, you know, is hard to believe.
2 minutes of a guy sitting in a glass booth isn't going to make an injury
Correct.
Any better.
Listen, the culture of hockey, having grown up in Canada,
yeah.
played hockey my whole life, the culture is very much, you know, we're going to fix this on our own.
Yeah.
If you go after my goalie, I'm going to take you out the next whistle.
Right, right, right.
Every sport has those unwritten rules, but hockey, it's a lot more overt. It's yeah. like the refs will swallow their whistles. They'll look the other way.
Yeah.
You guys go at it, fix it, and then let's move on.
Many years ago, watching hockey live or televised, when it was televised, the refs would just, the gloves would come off, the headgear, they would just let them fight for quite some time. And I'm shocked that they even let it go for 10, 20 seconds. How come people aren't breaking it up right away currently?
It's the culture of hockey.
I mean, it's part of the show.
It's part of the show in some respects. I mean, but also it's just the culture of we fix this on our own. We police it on our own. It's part of the sport. It's part of the honor code. You know, we don't need refs figuring it out. And that hasn't changed despite, you know, the settlement, despite all of these, you know, concussion issues that we're aware of.
Will they try to juice up the paperwork to indicate that if you're playing for a specific team and injuries are incurred over time, you don't have any legal rights to that? Is that even a possibility?
I don't think they'll do that, but the NHL took, you know, care in their press statement and in the settlement to say that we don't admit liability.
Oh, really?
Right? That's a very important statement yeah. because they're not saying, to your point, for future plaintiffs,
yeah.
that because we settled this case, we're accepting liability for future cases.
Really?
Future cases are up in the air, and, you know, plaintiffs will have to overcome the same burdens
wow.
As any other plaintiff.
I was watching the Hawks post-game show, and Jonathan Toews came out with his stitches and black eye because last week he got a stick in the face. And talking to Corey Crawford, and it's like there is just no spark in these guys right now. They just seem just heartbroken and there's nothing going on. So they need to change that. They have to turn that around.
Maybe
they're just broken.
Maybe the $22,000 they might get in the future will be the spark they all need.
A little bit. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
No, I just feel bad for them. Yeah. New coach. I know there's an adjustment period there, but they got to pick up the slack here and get. There was no enthusiasm. It just was breaking my heart listening to the postgame interviews.
It's a rough stretch. I mean, 8 losses in a row.
I know. We haven't won a game since October 25th.
Weeks. Yeah.
It's a Bears town now. It's all Bears.
How about
right?
that?
Well, you know what we're missing? Johnny Oduya.
There you go.
That's what's missing.
Or do you? I'm not sure. I'm not sure the answer to that question.
Rich, where can people hear you?
Well, oddly enough, people could tune in right here on WGN to Legal Faceoff, which is our podcast that Tina Martini and I host every 2 weeks.
Is that her real name?
We're not quite
like
sure.
It.
We're not
I
quite
like
sure.
It.
It's Tia Tequila and you host the podcast.
Yes, Tia Tequila and Tina Martini and
you're
I
all
host. We had some great guests yesterday. We had Dan Herbert, who is Jason Van Dyke's defense lawyer, who just got fired by the FOP.
Yeah.
So he's no longer going to be handling those cases. He called us on the way to Rock Island to visit with Van Dyke, who, of course, was convicted of second-degree murder.
Right.
We had two people from Making a Murderer, Part 2.
Wow.
We had Zellner, Catherine Zellner.
Love
her. Who's the lead lawyer now for Steve Avery, who was convicted of murder, of course, in Wisconsin. And then we had the former defense lawyer, Jerry Budig, who...
We've had him on. I love him.
They're not... You know, she's very critical of him, so it was kind of... They were not together, but it was kind
of interesting. Catherine Zellner was the topic of discussion through much of my... I had dinner with some friends last night, a going-away party, and they were all talking about how great she is.
I like her. I don't like the show. I gave up on the show literally last night. I was 2 episodes in. I found it just... I mean, as much as I love the first one, and I love those kind of true crime
making
stories...
Making a Murderer is not good?
The second one? Oh, my God. I mean, it was not good. It's not
really
good. It's hard to watch. It's a lot of procedural stuff, and she's great at it, you know, but... I don't love procedural shows in general.
Because you live
it's very meandering,
I find. Is it possible that for the first one, because they had so much time to formulate that show, it was what it was, and with this one, they really had to get it together in 9 months?
Yeah, there's some of that for sure. And, you know, there's a lot of focus on Avery's family.
Yeah.
Which, okay, but I don't need to see, like, them in the kitchen constantly. It's just, you know, so I gave up. I fast-forwarded to the last episode.
What if there were dragons in it?
Dragons would be cool.
Yeah, dragons are cool.
Do you think he did it? Do you want to go on record saying whether or not you think he did it?
That's a good question. I think he did it.
Oh.
You know, it's a close call, but as a lawyer who believes in the jury system, I'm going to, you know, give proper weight to that. But I do think there's a ton of issues, a ton of questions that make us question whether it was a fair trial.
Rich, thanks for coming by.
Thank you very much for having me. I always appreciate
it. It was very rewarding.
Legal Face-Off. Find it.
Thank you.
WGNplus.com.
We'll close things off next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.